And we're live. A little late, but we're live.
We are.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Justin.
How you going?
Nice to see you again. I'm well. Good to see you. How are you, Mike?
My day's been good. My day has been great. A little busy, but really, really good.
That's awesome.
I had all of the notes for today's episode prepared to talk about the rumors of the Canon R8 and R50 launch, and then like 2 hours ago they launched. So instead of rumors, we've got specs.
Even better to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. On the show, we're going to talk about those new releases, plus Nikon's new lens and Sigma's new lens, or Nikon's lenses. Exciting. And then we'll talk about AI and how it's not photography, but people keep calling it AI photography, and have a look at an AI image that won a prestigious photography competition here in Australia. Very prestigious, from a panel of expert photographers. And then we're going to wrap up by going through what's in our bags at the moment. What's in your bag? What's in my bag? What gear are we using? That's the plan.
Let's jump in.
I think we should. Yeah. If you're listening along live, all three of you, jump in the comments. Ask us a question.
Is there three? I think there's none.
There's not, it says zero. I just want to see if you're paying attention. Hello, live listeners. All right. So, before we get started, I'm Justin, photographer, founder of Lucky Camera Straps. Mainly shoot action sports now, but have shot weddings and all sorts of things with Jim. This is Jim. Say hi, Jim.
Hey.
Who are you, Jim?
I'm Jim, and I'm a photographer. I mainly shoot weddings these days. Used to do a bit of newspaper work.
Bit of newspaper work. How long did you work as a photojournalist?
6 years.
Yeah, full-time.
Yeah, full-time for five. One of them was I was at uni. Or two of the years I was at uni. So,
started as a photojournalist before going out and doing your own thing. Well, our own thing.
Doing our thing, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been shooting for how long?
13 years.
13 years?
13, wow. Yeah.
Nikon the whole time?
It seems like a long... Yeah, yes. Yeah, well, my first camera was a Panasonic, like a mirrorless point and shoot, like when they were... way ages ago. It's shot raw, but it was... Yeah, pretty limiting.
Yeah.
But yeah, then since then, Nikon all the way.
All the way. Well, until soon when you change to mirrorless and switch brands, maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
Okay, so the R8's out, which is Canon's something. Not quite sure where it fits in. It's the specs are 24 megapixel. Single card slot, very lightweight body, priced, we don't know exactly what in Australia yet, but $1,500 US, which puts it at a fair bit cheaper than an EOS R6 Mark II, dearer than an RP, which I actually own, which is like the entry level full frame mirrorless, which is also 24 megapixels. The EOS RP and the EOS R have been out for a long time, so they're due to get replaced. So this is a replacement for maybe the RP. It's hard to tell. It has the same battery size as the RP, I think, or similar. It doesn't have the full-size batteries. You know, it's got like little square batteries instead of a full-size DSLR battery, you know, the standard thing. So I don't know where it sits. Full frame.
Yeah.
Let me pull
the
it
one
up
card slot. Is it SD or like CF slot. Express?
One SD card slot.
Yeah, that's rough.
Well, look, it is. Let me bring it up on the screen. So it's not going to be a main wedding shooter's camera, but it could definitely be a backup, I think. I think it could definitely be a back. Like if you were running an R6 Mark II or Mark I or whatever is your main camera, or even an R5 or something, and you were mainly shooting one camera, I think this would be a fine backup. 6 frames a second. But so here's the thing. Here's the thing,
that's
Jim.
Slower than like a D750.
Not by much. That was 6.5.
Were they? I thought they were.
No, I think that was 6.5.
Okay.
So here's the thing. It doesn't have a full mechanical shutter. You can either shoot electronic first curtain or full electronic shutter, but there's no full mechanical shutter.
Yeah. So what does that mean for...
What does that mean? That means I think it might be limited to max shutter speed, 4/1000th of a second. I haven't had, like, this was only a few hours ago. I haven't dug into the specs much, but basically it means with electronic first curtain, you won't get rolling shutter and banding issues and stuff like that, like you will with full electronic. So you can kind of eliminate that, but yeah, it doesn't have a full shutter, and it seems like that's where they're heading. Obviously, anything that's mechanical is prone to failure over time. Yeah. It's something else that can go wrong. It's more expensive to manufacture. So they're bringing the price down of their manufacturing by eliminating mechanical components and replacing them with, you know, faster reading sensors. So
It looks tiny in that first photo, like very thin.
It wouldn't surprise me if it feels really like the RP, because the RP is really thin. It actually feels great in the hand with the grip on the bottom, this little grip extender that you get for the RP.
Yeah.
And they have the same grip extender. On the back, even, it kind of looks similar. So you've got no joystick, you know, less of the pro buttons, no jog wheel that Canon has that's amazing. It's missing a lot of the good stuff, but it's going to be a cheap camera. Photo video mode switch over there, which is good. Not great, but good. Better than not having a dedicated switch. It's not image stabilized at the sensor. It doesn't make it like an amazing video shooter's camera or something in terms of this is going to replace it as the cheapest, most amazing vlog camera you could ever get. It's still good though, because it still does full log 10-bit 4K 60 footage. Like, at full width, there's not many cameras that actually do that anywhere near this price point. So
yeah,
it just doesn't have stabilization. Hang on a minute.
Dual slots.
It says it's got dual slots.
Yeah, ooh. I was literally just reading that, and I was like,
No. We need to figure this out. Let's pull up another resource, because I was under the impression it had single.
I wonder if they've got that confused because it's UHS 2.
That's right.
Like, or if it is singular card slot, but
or if I'm just wrong, which is highly likely. Let's see.
Well, it only got announced a few hours ago, so
I know. Let's use Canon Rooms. I like Canon Rooms. I should have used them anyway. Let's bring them up. Boom, boom, boom. More pictures. All right. So yeah, so what the electronic front, so basically it's the R6 Mark II sensor, essentially autofocus. Whether or not it's a snappy, we'll wait to see, but they're saying that it's essentially the same and has the same, you know,
they say that all the time, all but stuff.
whether it can do it with a battery that small and all that kind of stuff, we have to sort of wait and see, but 40 frames a second full electronic and a 60 shot raw buffer, which is pretty good for a, you know, a lower level camera.
Yeah, that's better than like what I'm working with.
Yeah, so you know, the 6 frames a second frame rates probably hampers it a little bit. You can definitely shoot a wedding with that. I mean, it's fine, but if it was say 8 or 9, you'd be like, that's amazing for a cheap camera. Yeah. Like, you could literally do everything you need, but I'm just trying to see.
Well, what's the D850?
Nine.
Or is it
nine with a grip?
Yeah. It might be nine with a grip.
Seven. But what is it without? Seven or seven and a half without the grip,
I think. Yeah. It's like not a it's a pretty good, like it does most
pretty
things.
Pretty good speed. Yeah. I mean, yeah, so it'll be the same as the, I cannot find anything about the card slots. Let's see. No, nothing else. Okay. We'll go somewhere else. DP review.
Oh,
that'll help us out.
We've got some viewers, Justin.
Perfect.
Shots fired. Jeremy says, "Hey, legends. Hey, Jeremy. How you doing?
Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy. Do you know if the R8 has one card slot or two? Have you heard yet? We're just trying to find. It got released 2 to 3 hours ago. Dun, 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 dun. I'm sure it's one card
1500
slot.
US is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see where it lands, but single mechanical, sure. Card slots. All right. One card slot.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad we've sorted that out. So that really does sit it squarely in the, it's not going to be a professional's camera, but it can be in a professional's bag, depending on, you know, if it's for a backup or something like that. But it's, and obviously I'm not saying you can't do professional work with it. You can do it with anything. You do it with an iPhone, but that lack of a second card slot does,
yeah, but for maybe it's aimed at like videos.
Like yeah, but again, no image stabilization, so that does hold you back. So you've got to use stabilized lenses. It can be done, you know, shooting on a tripod. Shots by Jeremy. Just got off the phone with our Canon rep, and he didn't tell me anything. Sorry. You will be sorry, Jeremy. Go away. Okay. Moving on. Well, for me, the R8 definitely does look like it would be a reasonable backup camera, but I don't know. At the moment, I've got three cameras. I've got the R3, R5, and RP. The RP is really just sort of sitting around to get used for some things every now and then. The boys use it in the office for Lucky. It's a good camera. It definitely, I couldn't shoot a job with it without being disappointed on just the autofocus and stuff like that. It's very slow. Yeah. It's fine, but it's just really slow. And I wouldn't be loving life shooting with it. It'll be interesting to see if the R8 would be a far better camera to just have, or are you better off to just spend the extra and have an R6 as a real camera that you could literally do anything with. So,
yeah. Well, it's probably just offering a different entry point to the market.
Look, hey, as an upgrade to an R, like as a model upgrade to the RP, it's perfect. If it comes in at a similar price point or slightly dearer, it'll be a great new addition. Whether I would upgrade the RP to it, I don't know. But, you know, for a new buyer, it's going to be a great camera at that kind of price point. Because that sensor, the same sensor as the R6 Mark II, it'll take great photos. Okay.
Cool.
Thoughts? Any other thoughts? No. They also released an R50 little crop sensor camera. Not super exciting to me, but sits at a price point. Moving on to your kind of side of the world, even though you don't
hey, have any
mirrorless. Don't have any mirrorless gear yet, Jim, but when you do change, if you go with Nikon, they now have an 85 f1.2, big beast of a lens. Obviously, looks very nice. Similar to the other 85 bokeh monster lenses that are out from other brands. It's a monster.
Yeah, it looks delicious. That could be a 105 replacement.
I was wondering that. You shoot the 105 1.4 a lot.
Yeah, I love it.
I've shot it a lot until I changed from Canon. But neither of us have really ever shot 85 a lot, have we?
No, I used to have one. I bought that odd lens off you. I had it for ages. Didn't really love the length. But I also wasn't really matching it with like a 28 or a 35 that I would now.
Yeah.
And I have thought about maybe just jumping on the 35-85 bandwagon.
It would be very interesting to see you sort of commit to that for a few weddings and see how you like it. You know, I do love 28, but the 3585 that people work with is such a simple solution, and then you just need maybe something a little bit wider, you know, to throw on every now and then. This is an interesting one. It's probably not quite wide enough to be your wide lens, but how cool is this? 26mm 2.8. It's apparently the lightest and thinnest full frame autofocus lens ever made, I think.
Yeah. It looks cool.
Like on the street.
You could run that and the 85.
You could. If you weren't after, you know, sort of that, you know, f1.4 look from your 28 or this being a 26, you know, if you're happy to just kind of document with it, still get probably beautiful images, that would be that nice little pocketable camera, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a nice question from F-Stoppers, this article. Which of these two or both do you plan to add to your kit, Jim? Well, you'd have to upgrade to mirrorless first.
Yeah, I'd have to jump into a Z9 or two Z9s.
Two Z9s, you think? Wow. They surely won't be far away from trickling that Z9 tech down into a smaller body as well, with less speed, maybe. More of a wedding focus thing, but that same kind of autofocus and electronic shutter tech, stacked sensor.
Well, the Z7 and the Z6 Mark IIs are both, I guess, due for an upgrade soon, you would think.
That'll be
coming. And at the moment, they're not exciting me enough to, like, those two cameras aren't enough to step away from the DF50. And obviously the Z9 would be, but the cost is...
Well, like we've talked about, you're looking at changing over a big chunk of your kit, because I think just buying the body and adapting the older lenses, you don't get, even though they autofocus well and all that stuff, I don't think it's worth it for you yet when you primarily shoot stills and the DF50 is still a workhorse with amazing image quality.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But,
yeah. Final bit of gear news before we talk about AI and AI not photography. Is the Sigma 50mm 1.4 that they've just released. Don't care about it too much because it's only available for Sony and I think Leica mounts.
Okay.
So it's basically their art version of their mirrorless version of the 50mm 1.4 art lens. It's been like a mainstay for, I don't even know how long that's been out, but.
Oh, because they can't release it for Canon yet, can they? Because Canon aren't allowing the tech.
And they haven't done anything for Nikon, from what I can tell. I think it's only Sony and Leica L mount. Yeah. So 670 grams, so a similar kind of weight. That's what the Art Series is were weighing in at on the old mounts.
It's pretty good. I still think that's pretty reasonable.
But yeah. Apparently... you know, new optical formula designed to take advantage of the short flange distance in mirrorless cameras. Cool. That's what all mirrorless lenses do. Improved.
Well, you can't have a long flange.
Approved. I can't pronounce this word. Sagittal coma. It's an interesting word. Improved sagittal coma flare. This is what's interesting is cleaner bokeh, because that's what everyone always talked about with the old Art Series lenses was the bokeh. Because they were so sharp, the bokeh wasn't necessarily as bokeh-licious as other lenses. And I don't know.
A bit choppy. That was just,
maybe more like a, I'm sure they weren't like this, but you know, like what a nifty 50 bokeh kind of looks like. Obviously it was better than that, but like when things are kind of sharper and then compared to that 58 1.4 that you shoot with, which is deliciously soft, but also then the subject is also a little bit soft. Whereas the Art Series lenses were super sharp. So I think people maybe got a bit excited about how the bokeh wasn't clean enough or whatever. But it's interesting to see that these, I don't know, they've tried to improve it on this. I'm sure it'll get rave reviews. It's one thing that's interesting is it's got the like the aperture ring, which is not something that I'm too fussed over, you know, like the auto to manual aperture ring. I don't know.
Especially on a mirrorless camera, it's not like you can adapt it back to an older.
I think people like the shooting experience of setting their aperture that way and then being able to pop it in auto and stuff. And it's not something I definitely don't. No, it's not my style, but it's cool that they're doing it. I prefer the control rings on the Canons, being able to set them to a white balance for video and stuff like that. But you know, we can't get this for Canon anyway, so.
No.
Yeah. The gear news this week. Exciting week in cameras and lenses.
Yeah. All the stuff we won't buy.
I might. Nah, I won't.
Yeah, you.
I haven't got much on the list at the moment. I did buy something. I did buy something this week. I'll talk to you about it later. I don't think a week has gone by recently when I haven't bought something, especially with this, you know, setting this podcast up and stuff. So much gear to buy.
So much.
AI photography. What do you think about, excluding the news article that we saw last week of that photo that we're about to pull up, what did you think about it before that? Like, there's been rumblings on the internet. You see it pop up in people's YouTube videos and things like that. But had you really seen anything from
not like that
in your world?
Not quality. Like, just weird things of, like, make a random.
Like a creepy, super. Or someone would be like, you know, like make a photo of Donald Trump riding a bicycle on the moon or something, and then it kind of pieces it together or something weird like that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, just that sort of stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, that's interesting. That photo that like Grant sent through, image. I think you can call it an image. Like it is an image.
Absolutely, it's an image. It's not a photo. It's definitely not a photo. I'll pull it up. So, here we go. Back to Australian Photography. The same amazing publication. I do actually love these guys, but they steered us wrong on the 2-card slots on the R8. So, we'll have to fact check this article too. No, I'm kidding. I love you guys. This photo here, this beautiful wave breaking at sunset with surfers getting dumped and beautiful colors in the water. This won a photo competition last month, and it actually ended up making news. It was on like news.com.au, which is a terrible Australian news site, but it was on there.
questionable news.
News is like, it's a, you know, loose description.
Yeah.
But it was on there, which is not a photo publication. A Sydney-based company called Absolutely AI submitted this without making it clear that this wasn't an actual photo. This was an AI-generated image.
Mm-hmm. As a test?
They wanted to test out to see whether it could fool a panel of expert judges, of expert photography judges. And it did, and it won. After it won, they did give the prize back. Like, oh, they didn't even accept the prize. They messaged them and they put a public message out saying, hey, we just wanted to see what would happen if we entered this. Obviously, we don't want to take the prize. It's not fair and blah, 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 because it's not a real photo. It's not a photo at all, is what I'm saying. Do you think this is a photo? Is this photography?
No, it's like, not photography. I'd say it's an image.
But why isn't it photography?
Photography is like capturing a moment in time, and this is not a moment in time at all.
Well, this moment never happened.
Yeah.
That's right. I agree. There's this gray area between an image captured on film or a sensor that's not been manipulated in any way other than from the intrinsic properties of that sensor or that film, and that's what it looks like. There's that, and then there's all the way through to you've taken 10 images and stacked this on that and replaced the sky and done all sorts of manipulation, but fundamentally it was still built from pieces of photographs that were captured by putting light onto either a sensor or photo paper, film, light went through something and was exposed and then made a photo, and then maybe it got manipulated, and then there's a point where that manipulation turns into digital art. When you've gone past what is recognizable as a moment that was captured to literally just drawing with pixels. And then this is the step again where a human didn't even draw it with pixels, a machine drew it with pixels. And I don't think it's a photo. I believe you're correct. Calling it a digital image or an artificially created image, digital art, even artificial art, AI art, not a photo.
Yeah, actually, you probably couldn't even lead with it saying that it's an image or art. I think if you lead with AI and then say art image, I think that's probably a better representation.
What makes it a little bit weird is the company that sort of put it out is really saying that they won a popular photography competition. Beautiful image, but it's not real, and they've sort of put all that stuff out. But they wanted to prove that artificially intelligent technology could pass the ultimate test. Could an AI-generated image not only slip by unnoticed, but actually be awarded the top prize by a photography expert? Now, this is where I'll push back a little bit. The competition was a photo of the month competition for DigiDirect, which is a photo online and somewhat in-store photo retailer in Australia. I wouldn't say that their free to enter monthly photo competition is really, you know, you're not really slipping past a panel of experts to be awarded top prize. I think it probably, someone probably looked at it and saw the colors and stuff and were like, yeah, that's a cool photo. But they probably didn't look any further. And looking at the image further is where you can really see that it's in no way real, in terms of the light isn't even coming from the correct direction to match the shadows. Why is the light shining through with this beautiful sort of teal blue coming through the wave here, but not on this side? Why is this shadow coming from this direction when the sun is over here? Like, why are these waves blowing this way down the ocean? This giant monster shore break is dumping on these surfers with a strange rip thing in the middle, but there's no wave coming behind it at all.
When you break it down, there's actually a lot of
flaws in this artificially created image. It's cool that it's able to grab the things that our brain goes, wow, look at those colors, look at those complementary colors, and the wind blowing off the dynamic wave and all that sort of stuff, but it's not even close to being a real scene. And then even if it was close to being a real scene, it never happened. Like, the difficulty in capturing a great photo is getting those surfers at that moment when the wave breaks and the light's great. Like, if you can just conjure it up, what does that even mean then?
We just stay home.
Well, you can stay home, but and then you're conjuring up things that aren't real. And at some point, if the AI is not getting fed stuff by photographers, at some point it can't create anything new. You know, we need to be out documenting the world, feeding it this new stuff. All right. That thoughts? Any more thoughts on this thing?
No, I think it's going to get you upset.
I am upset. No, I'm not really upset. Yeah. I don't care. The main thing is I just want, because most people, this is great, AI-generated image, perfect. Good job, Australian photography. What I'm hating seeing is everyone saying AI photography, because it's not AI photography. It's an AI-generated image. But what's super interesting is this. Getty Images is suing Stable Diffusion, which is an AI image generator software company thing, for $1.8 trillion with a T dollars, because they've stolen over 12 million of Getty's copyrighted photos and used them to educate its image generation engine. To the point when you can even get it to generate Getty's logo because it's like the watermark has come in so many times. You can get it to, and the logo pops up, as you can see here, the logo pops up in this AI generated image of a soccer player. It's like, okay.
Is that soccer player look real or is there something wrong with?
Oh yeah, that's AI generated. It's messed up. Like look at his foot. Yeah. It's not even. But it's tried to like
change. It's hard for me to say. It's a bit small.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. But no, his leg is turning very strange directions. Yeah. Yeah, basically they've just stolen the work of all of the photographers that have submitted work to Getty. And then use that to try and train their engine. And Getty actually has a reasonable case by the sounds of it. Obviously, they're probably not going to get $1.8 trillion because that's a lot of money, but they're coming in hard and they'll settle for $1.8 billion, you know?
Does Stable Diffusion have any like that much? It's like a lot of money.
I don't think they have that much money. They wouldn't be making any money. They would be in, I would imagine they would be in like the startup phase. So they would just have a lot of investment and that kind of thing. But look at it. It's putting Getty's logo
on. It's automatically putting it in the images.
I have no idea. Yeah. But it's an AI generated image from Stable Diffusion and it says with Getty logo. Whether someone typed in put Getty logo in there, don't know. But, yeah, crazy, right? So look at this. They're saying that AI is going to replace photographers. Can you see that?
Yeah, it looks
messed up.
Yeah,
it's not there yet. It's not there yet. We're all okay.
No,
it's okay, guys. At the moment. Keep taking photos. We're fine.
Keep buying cameras.
Yeah, keep buying cameras. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's cool technology. It's the same as chat GPT. It's cool technology and you need to like learn about it, but I think people get a bit excited when they sort of say it's the end of photography as we know it or that kind of thing. Like chat GPT is going to replace you switch this around.
Yeah, I think we work better on this side.
Yeah, I like it. It's nice.
I think we did this last week and then we forgot to do it this week.
We did. I don't know. What do you think? Anything? Any other thoughts?
I think that we're in a crazy time where AI is making soccer players.
Yeah, well, smudgy soccer players. Elena Jennings says, if you're worried about AI, you mustn't be a great photographer. I agree.
Yeah, I would. But I agree.
But, you know, there's an interesting point to be made that, you know, maybe people will be less likely to want to take up photography because they think, you know, it's dying or, you know, why bother when you can just AI generate an image or whatever. But, you know, you can't AI generate something that's new. So,
yeah, it's definitely on my mind with, say, like the editing and that sort of thing.
Well, you're using an AI editing software.
Yeah, testing it out.
But the, you know, it's basically setting exposure and white balance and applying a preset. Like there's a big difference, a big gap between that and like, I don't know, uploading a photo of the bride and the groom and then just getting it to AI generate their wedding day. Maybe.
Yeah. Here's a
maybe
selfie.
That's the future. Right. Maybe that means they don't even have to, have a wedding. You know, they can have like a metaverse wedding or something where the whole thing's just AI generated. And then
everyone plugs in.
Yeah, maybe. Yep. The Matrix.
Let's stay out of that.
What's in your camera bag, Jim?
Do you want to get it?
Yeah, get your camera bag.
I've got two.
All of our viewers will wait. They're fine. Okay. All right. I'll just talk by myself quietly.
I can't reach.
Okay. Fast moving sports photography. Yeah, AI is not going to be able to do. I mean, the thing is, AI can't do anything with sports photography anyway because you've got to capture the moments that are happening live. That's why the Olympics and the photographers that do giant sporting events, like there's so many photographers there and they're just under pressure to pump images out and get them to news publications within 10 minutes. You know, like it's crazy.
Yeah, they've got their little laptops and their little hoods and stuff, and they're just pumping through it. And it's like, but this is this crazy world that we live in where everyone needs everything 10 seconds ago.
You can't read about it in the newspaper the next day. It has to be like immediately on social media.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they miss out on the clicks.
Yeah. I'm kind of like with our weddings and that sort of thing. I was chatting to some people the other day, and, you know, wedding photographers, apparently, I haven't heard of anyone doing it, but apparently this is what some people are saying at a wedding event I was at the other day, that this photographer is delivering like 250 images on the day.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, we used to print an album out on the night. Tell them to beat that.
Yeah, but we did like 12 photos and we stopped doing it because it was taking away from what we were there to do. Yeah,
that's right. 250. I mean, that's taking a step towards the TikTok weddings that we looked at, where they just get a TikToker along to literally live TikTok the day, and then it's done. By the end of the day, they've got their content, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of options, but
can you still hear me? Okay, sorry, because I'm a bit further
away. I can hear you. Okay, look, it's not amazing, but we'll deal. What's in your bag? Move in. Show us some stuff. Cameras. What cameras are you?
Camera strap.
Ah, oh, yeah. Look, there's. I'll take the plug. We better put the banner up. Yeah. I'll give you the money later.
I just had to put it on actually because I had a commercial shoot this morning where I was shooting with two bodies, so I was using my pre-production dual camera strap.
The dual camera strap.
Yeah, that's been in pre-production mode for a while.
Yeah,
but
maybe. Maybe we get at least 5 emails a week about dual camera straps.
Yeah.
Look, they'll
and
they're coming. They're coming. They're just, you know, not a priority.
They're good. I've been using them for about 3 years. They're battle tested. Yeah.
We've both been using them. They just, we haven't been able to squeeze them into the production schedule just yet.
Yeah. The tooling is not done.
The tooling is not done. So, what cameras are you using?
Mm-hmm.
How many?
I got two one with a 58. Yeah. One with a 58, one with a 28.
Yeah. So you would primarily shoot with two bodies exactly the same, both D850s, no grips on them.
No. I've got a grip and I haven't used it in probably 3 years.
Yeah.
It's good. It's handy to have as like a spare battery. Just not that I don't have enough batteries, but just as like a fail safe.
And it speeds up the frames per second. Yeah. And it gives you obviously double the battery life in that grip. So you can not change batteries as frequently on a wedding day, which the main thing I liked about the grip other than the extra speed was it's more comfortable sometimes with certain lenses. But that's less of an issue on the D850 because they're quite chunky and nice in the hand anyway. So
the 105 as well. That's my three main lenses: 105, 28, 58.
So 105,
1.4. Yeah,
1.4. The 58, 1.4. Show us. Oh, not too close. So 105, 1.4. The 58, 1.4. And the 28 1.4, which are three lenses that I used to shoot with a lot as well. And tried and tested. Of those three lenses, the 58 is the oldest. It's noticeably different to the other two, whereas the other two seem to be like similar.
They're tack sharp. Yeah.
Tack sharp. The 58's not tack sharp. The 58's a little soft. But still delightful. I know you can't hear me, but that's fine. I'll just keep talking to the people. Hello, people. The 58 isn't tack sharp, but it has a very smooth roller from in focus to out of focus. That transition is nice look about it. But what aperture would you normally shoot the 58 at a wedding?
I know you've had some better luck than me, but I can't shoot it below 2.2. It's just out. It doesn't matter what I'm shooting. It's just out. Soft. It's out of focus. It looks soft. It's always soft. Yeah. At 2.2, it's it's sharp. Like I shoot it almost all day at 2.2.
And one thing which we tested a lot in the early days, I mean, you probably haven't even used a 24-70 for a long time since you're mainly shooting weddings, but the look difference, if you put that 58 at 2.8 and compare it to a 24-70 at 2.8 at a similar focal length, they look very different. The 58 has a much nicer quality to the image. It's just more pleasing. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe it's that bokeh, softer, smoother bokeh, something like that. But it's great, but it isn't tack sharp. Whereas the 28 and the 105,
tack sharp.
Yeah. And would you say you can shoot those at 1.4?
Yes. Yeah. Depending on the situation, wouldn't shoot them more.
Yeah. How often would you shoot them at 1.4 on say a wedding day?
Maybe each of them, maybe once a day. It'll be like a specific shot that I'm like, all right, I've got a bit of time. No one's moving. Things have slowed down a little bit and I can take some time and like really nail it. Like the 28 at 1.4, you're getting nice and close. It just you got to be the right angles and everything because it really just throws that background.
Yeah. And then what about, what would your average sort of aperture be cruising around with those two lenses during the wedding day, the 28 and the 105? Like, what are you sort of hovering around most of the time?
The 105 is normally at 2.2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually shoot the 28 a lot at 2.8.
Okay.
Just to give me a slight, bigger depth of field.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just for, say, if you're doing a ceremony photo or something, you just want a bit of depth to it.
And so of those three lenses, you carry the three of them usually the whole day?
I don't have it here, but I run a little hip packet, a little think tank, a little hip just connects to my belt. And I just cycle those three lenses with the two camera bodies.
Like a lens pouch. So
yeah.
dual camera harness made by Lucky Straps, not available yet. Probably not available ever. We'll see. And so dual camera harness, two cameras with lenses, mm-hmm. and then one lens pouch with the additional lens. And that's you for most of the day?
Pretty much all day, yeah.
What else you got in your bag then? What else we got?
20,
1.8. Oh, I like that one.
Yeah,
That's a nice lens.
I use it and the 16 to 35 F4. This is like a great lens. Dance floors. Yeah. I don't normally shoot it other than say maybe a sunset or dance floors.
Yeah.
But
and then
it'll be stopped down to like 7.1.
For sunset photos.
For the dance floor.
Oh, and dance floor, yeah. Obviously the commercial work and stuff like that, it will get a workout as well. That sort of lens and sports photography. Yeah.
Yeah. But I haven't used it on a commercial shoot in ages.
Okay.
I'd probably go to the 20 before I'd go to that. Unless I really needed the extra width.
Yep.
But hiding back here. Samyang 12mm.
Fisheye. Delightful.
Yeah. It's a cool little lens. It's a manual focus. I don't get it out often if it's a crazy party at a wedding. I definitely will get it out.
Like a big dance floor.
Yeah, if it's a pumping dance floor, I'll get it out because it's like, all right, these people are, fun and crazy, so I'll get it out for that.
Just trying to find some photos to test your skills. So something like this, what lens do you reckon you shot that with?
16 to 35 maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Or the 20. It might have been the 20.
This one, 21.8?
Yes, definitely.
No.
Yeah, probably. I think it was the 20.
Looks like it.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been the F4.
No.
There was see how there's like a bit of red on her dress?
Yeah.
So this was a photo on a farm, and the farm had a weighbridge, and on the weighbridge is a red... scales numbers, which was hundreds of meters away, that's what showed up.
Yeah, because that would have been like a 15 second exposure or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like 10, I reckon. From
10.
It wasn't super long because there was still a fair bit of ambient light.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just trying to see. Yeah, like your wider stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been... That's pretty wide.
Yeah.
16. It's maybe still 20. Yeah, 16 20. Maybe.
Maybe we'll have to do this in Lightroom one day.
Yes, probably easier.
check some data.
Well, just tells me.
I like playing the game, like the...
Yeah. This would have been 28, I reckon. Oh, actually, that's this pretty one. Wide. That's a cool photo, this, that one. This one. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's pretty wide.
Yeah. Love a pool photo.
Always fun. I wish I could and zoom in on that face.
On Tom's face. So this was a shoot for Culture Hitch at Camp David Farm. And so it was like a styled shoot, and this was the end of the night. And I wasn't even shooting. Obviously, Tom wasn't a bride, but he wanted to jump in too. And yeah, we made it happen. I think we made a joke earlier in the week that we could do it. So,
very cool.
Do you want to ask? Else?
Oh, yeah. What else is in your bag? Tell me.
A 7200 2.8.
Yeah.
That is since I got it serviced, and that's how long it's been since I've used it, which is forever. I don't actually use it anymore.
Why don't you use it?
I just don't really find the need to shoot at 200 mil anymore. I used to use it every wedding. But now I sort of do everything with the 105 that needs to be.
You just walk in closer. If you need to get in closer, you just zoom around with your feet. Yeah. Okay.
So, and this is just a little f-stop insert, backpack insert, isn't it, Justin?
Yep.
It's the large. Large
ICU.
Yeah. I run it in a drawer. I've got a canopy on the back of my ute, and I run it in there. So it just sort of pulls out, and everything's accessible. I think you've got a photo.
There was one somewhere. in the thumbnail of this. Check the thumbnail out. You'll see. It's not a very good photo.
Yeah.
So you leave that in your ute all the time. You just grab the lenses out that you're going to use and put them on your cameras, on your harness, and walk inside. And that ICU, that case just stays in your ute.
Yeah, all the time.
But you have another bag with like batteries and stuff like that in it?
Yes. Yeah. So I use that to sort of get out what I'm going to need. And then I run a smaller think tank bag, which is over here. And it has, lenses, has like a 2470 in it all the time, mainly just because it doesn't fit in that bag, but it's also the do everything lens that if one of your anything fails, it'll kind of do it.
Yeah.
It's got some flashes.
What? Godox?
Yeah, Godox. Yeah, so I'm running Godox. Two AD200s and then a broken 860 at the moment, and a Nikon SB910 for on-camera work. So
okay.
That seems to do everything I need.
Enough lighting for pretty much anything.
Yeah, just about.
How did you light this photo? Oh, did it not need any lighting?
No. So that's that was like a super flat lighting day. At the end of it. And then so that's just one light off to the left and another light off the bottom of the dam bank just behind them, popping them off the background a little bit.
Yeah, so it does have a little rim light behind them there. And then and then there's just over here somewhere there's AD200 just
I might have snooted it to try and just get it to with a grid as well, probably.
Yeah,
only hit them.
If you're not aware of what a snoot is, it's like a tube that you put over the end of a flash that most of them will like close down progressively or whatever, but it's basically a snoot and a grid are two different ways to try and focus the light on the subject so that it doesn't spill and flash all around this area and light up all this grass and stuff a lot, and especially closer to the flash because you'll have way more light power hitting here than you would over here. So you've got to be careful not to make sure that it doesn't spill out the light and just blast this area. So you do that by sort of tilting the flash up and, maybe grid and a snoot and or both to try and isolate the subject to get light on there. Cool. So that bag's basically, is that the bag that you would take into a reception or something that with all your lighting gear and stuff in it?
Yeah, it's kind of like the bag that's ready to go. So it's got some spare cards, all that sort of, the some snoots, some grids, some flash, what do you call them? Little sender units, the Godox. Transmitters.
Transmitters?
Yeah, those things. Yeah, put that in there. And actually as well, some Ziploc bags, which are super handy for when it's raining and you want to do photos outside, drop them over a... over the flash, and it's essentially waterproof. It's like a little umbrella for your camera.
It's a good idea. Clever idea for you to come up with there, Jimbo.
I made it. Yeah, there you go. That was pouring rain. Yep. It was actually really wet, that one.
Did you did you put them over your flash on that day?
I did. Yeah. Bags? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's nice. The flash behind them is probably 20, 30 meters away to try and catch as much rain as possible.
Yeah.
Actually, that might have even been two backlights, maybe. I can't remember. Yeah. Might have just been one.
Nice. Cool. Any other gear things, anything else in your bag that you want to tell us about, tell the world?
No, I reckon that's about it. What about you? What are you running at the moment?
Too much stuff. So I can't really...
This is going to be a long podcast.
Can't really show you guys. It will be. I want to bring the case up here, but it's too heavy. I won't be able to do it. Maybe I'll try. Let's see. Hang on.
Nice.
Some of the gear isn't in it because I have it set up for the podcast and I also have a shoot in the morning that I'm packing for, but this is my Pelican case. And I've kind of limited myself to only having an amount of gear that fits in this case. And then I've slowly bought more stuff and I've
just got to get better at packing
I've changed the rules so that lighting doesn't have to fit in this case because I actually don't use lighting much anymore anyway. But my camera gear that I own has to fit in here that I use. Otherwise, I've got too much shit. That's my current plan.
Yeah. So how long till you buy a bigger case?
Hang on.
How long till you buy a bigger case?
Look, I'm trying to be good. Trying to be good. So far, it's working quite well. It's nice. Basically, I want a case that I can put everything in it and drop anywhere and do a photo or video job with anything, everything in that case, and including charging. I've set it up for charging.
That was pretty cool.
I'll do a whole nother video of that, but basically I've set it up so I can charge all my cameras and stuff in the case with USB-C charging and the drone and everything. So I can't show you my R5 because it's this camera here. So the R5 and my wide angle lens are out of the frame being used. But so my R5 was the first Canon mirrorless camera. I switched back from Nikon to Canon, bought the R5 after it got released. But shooting mainly action sports, when the R3 came out, I got very, very tempted and I ended up buying it.
It's a pretty cool camera.
This camera is now my main camera and I love it. It's a full-size body, so it takes the nice big batteries. They last all day. The video specs are awesome. It shoots at 30 frames a second, and its autofocus is super snappy. It's the perfect camera for me. One tiny downside is obviously the size. It doesn't fit in, you know, backpacks and stuff as easily as a non-gripped body, but the pros definitely outweigh the cons. That's the only con. Everything else is awesome. Love this camera. Love it.
Yeah, it's a cool camera. Love it.
It's a cool camera. It's just the autofocus is so good. Image quality is great. It's only 24 megapixel, but 26, 24, something. But it's fine for everything that I do.
The R5, 24s and like that kind of enough on a full frame body. Like we shot D750s for a long time. You shot the D5, which was only 20, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was only 20. Yeah, 20.9. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, it's enough.
The difference is
especially with the speed.
Yeah, the difference is if you have to crop, and obviously having the R5, like you got so much cropping power. You can crop verticals out of it and do all that sort of stuff. Or if you just want, someone wants just a huge image, really high quality, I'd grab the R5 for like a commercial shoot. I did a big group photo the other day and stuff like that. I would use the R5, but I find myself reaching for the R3 like 90% of the time or more.
Yep.
It's my favorite camera. Definitely. Moving on.
Is there more?
Oh, cameras. No. That's all for main cameras. We'll get to action cameras later. Lenses. So my wide angle lens, the 15-35 Canon RF 2.8 is on the R5 doing this photo, doing this video. What are we doing? Podcast. I use it a ton for mountain bike photography. It's just and videography because it's so versatile. It's like 15-35 at 2.8, obviously you can get that super wide shot, but 35mm at 2.8, I can shoot in video mode, video crop mode, and it's kind of like closer to a 50. And yeah, it's a pretty versatile lens. It's fast autofocusing. I really haven't seen too many problems with it at all. It's probably not the perfect lens. Any wide zoom is going to have sort of funny things in the corners and stuff like that, but it's pretty damn sharp.
It's a nice lens.
It's a great lens. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. It's not too heavy. It's up around 900 grams or something like that. So it's not too bad. Taking me back to the days where you can just use two zooms and sort of get away with everything.
Yeah.
What else do I have? I've got the 16mm 2.8 that I'm testing, and it will find a place in the bag as a backup for the wide and a lightweight option for certain shoots. It's good. It's not great, but for the size, it's really, really good. And
so Justin, I think
something
we didn't sort of touch on earlier was like you've got backups, like so you're obviously keeping that. You've got a 15-35.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Don't really need it.
Probably something I should have mentioned is, yeah, you're exactly right. The whole kit that has to fit into this bag, the other thing is everything needs to be redundant. So I have to have two cameras. I can't have just one camera. I have to have two wide lens options. They don't have to be perfect and the same. I'm not going to have two 15-35s. So I want to pair something that brings a useful element to certain shoots, like a lightweight 16mm, and pair that with a high-end versatile 15-35mm lens. That's the exact way that I've sort of designed this kit on purpose.
And my bag's the exact same.
Yeah. You want to make sure if anything goes down, it may not be exactly the way you like to work, but you can easily do any job still. So, and that's also why. So the 35mm 1.8 image stabilized lens, really great for video. I don't use it a heap, but if I was going to just do, I actually use it a lot for personal stuff. Like if I was just going to throw a lens on a camera to yeah. travel with or something like that, it would probably be this, and I could shoot anything with it. I shot I shot Grant's entire wedding with this. Maybe not entire, that's not true. Some of the ceremony I didn't shoot with this, but basically the whole day.
Really?
And yeah.
Just, yeah. I thought we had the 28-70.
No, it's too heavy.
Yeah, fair.
I would often use that, and I think I use it in the ceremony, but yeah, once it came to outside of that, you can just walk around with this little lens. It's a great focal length. You know, I used to love the 28, the 35 is a little bit more cropped in than I would like, but I'm getting used to it and it's nice and light. So yep. Very handy lens to have. Obviously good backup in case something around that range goes down, and it's super light.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is probably the one where most people say I'm an idiot, but I don't care. 24-105 f4
mm-hmm.
and 28-70 f2.
Yeah.
Most people would either say, why didn't you just get the 24-70 2.8? It can do both. And my reasoning is thus. This lens is amazing, and it replaces my main primes for shooting something like a wedding. Which mm-hmm. I don't do much of anymore, but I do, and I still need to be able to do it. And also, I've used this for mountain bike shoots, and it creates an image that you don't see that often. Most people shooting mountain bikes are using, like an F4 wide-angle lens and then a 70 to 200 or something. They're not using this mid-range, and definitely not an mm-hmm. F2, because Canada are the only ones that make it, and it's really heavy. It's great for video, other than a little bit of focus breathing, but it's a beast. But
it's heavy.
You could shoot anything with this, though.
Anything, any job.
If you just had this one lens, you could get away, other than like really getting stuck in a wide angle thing. But you know what would be cool? Just bring the little 16mm 2.8 along with it.
Mm.
Then you could basically do anything.
Yep.
So the F4 and the 2.8, similar but different. They're backups for each other. The F4 is an awesome, lighter weight, do-it-all lens. So if I had to just take one lens to, say, shoot a full mountain bike job, I could probably get away with it for this, especially if it was mostly video. Again, pair the 16mm 2.8 with it, and you got a super lightweight travel kit that you could do anything with. 24-105 mm-hmm. and a 16mm 2.8. Dunzo. So that's why I own both of those lenses, because 24-70 2.8... on the long end just doesn't have enough pop for me. It's not exciting enough. 70mm at 2.8, whereas 70mm at F2 is really great looking.
Nice.
And then 105 at F4 looks pretty cool too. It starts to get into that longer range. It's exciting enough. Yeah. Not great, but it can get that compression and stuff.
Was it the 24-120 that Nikon do?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Yeah, like having it's extra exciting range enough. Would be even better. Yeah.
Mm.
The Nikon one, unfortunately, was a little bit... it had a lot of flaws. This has a few flaws, but it's much better. And I think that's just because the mirrorless design allows for a bit different sort of optics. They were sort of struggling to fit all that stuff. But 24-120, that Nikon range, I would prefer that even more than 105, having that a little bit longer. And then... the awesome 70-200 2.8 that's so small, it fits in my new Mindshift belt pack thing. It fits like vertically in my Pelican case. It's awesome.
That's tiny. Yeah, it's a cool lens.
It's like the 28-70 F2 is a reason to switch to Canon. The 70-200 2.8 is also a reason to switch to Canon. It's so small. I mean, it gets bigger.
Yeah.
But it's
probably the only thing I don't like about it.
But well, you can just walk around with it like that if it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
You can have it extended all the time.
No.
And then you just zoom it back in to take a photo. If that makes you... Is it like a confidence thing or...
No, that's not a confidence thing.
If you need it to be larger...
No. I just... The fact that it zooms out, I don't love my my 24-70 Tamron. I think does it as well. And I just don't love lenses like that. But
why?
It is I don't know, if you want, they feel a bit cheaper.
I shot with this in the rain for 2 hours straight in the rain, like no cover, nothing for 2 hours straight, and it was fine.
It's pretty good.
I think it's fine. I haven't shot with it since, but I'm pretty sure it's fine. Grant's commenting in the grower, not a shower.
Yeah. I think you've probably just blown a lot of people's minds that you would shoot in the rain for one, let alone for 2 hours.
Well,
that would probably give some people a fit.
We're trying to get some cool mountain bike shots, and they turned out great. It did mess with the camera a little bit. We talked about it on the last show. One of the buttons stopped working for a little while, and then it dried out. Once I got it home, it works fine. But it definitely puts a bit of pressure. Like when they talk about weather sealing, and these are like Canon's L lenses, and the R3 are their highest level of weather sealing. And I think I was probably pushing the limits of it because the camera started glitching out. It was wet.
Oh, you're in the rain.
Because there's a difference between being in the rain for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes during a shoot than just being out there for 2 hours.
It's soaking into everything.
It gets time to get in. All right, what else is in my bag? I'll keep this rolling. So that's essentially all the lenses in my bag. I've got two other lenses that are on the chopping block at the moment, the 50 1.8. Look, I'll probably keep it. Maybe I just hide it in a drawer instead of having it in my bag. It's really small. It's the same size as the 16mm 2.8. This is where I'm pushing the limits of my kit rules.
Do you leave that on like the RP or anything for the lucky boys?
Nah, they've got a 50 older EF 50 1.4 with that. It's like, look, I've shot some stuff with it, and it was actually really fun, and it satisfied my need for a 50 so that I didn't buy the 51.2 for $3,500. This was all I needed, really. But I've shot it at a couple of jobs, and I would rather use the 28-70 if I was going to use that kind of focal length. Otherwise, I just work around it and haven't found the need for the 50 that often. Doesn't focus fast enough to do sports. I was surprised it was actually a little bit slow, but it's probably because I've been spoiled by like the 28-70 is like lightning. Not the 28-70, the 7200 is like lightning. 28-70 is a little bit slower, but it still works. This is slower again, and it just gets to the point where it's like I can't make people go back and do stuff over and over again to get the shot.
People are going to get hurt or something. So
or just tired. Filters, variable ND filters from Nissi. No particular reason, but they had a 95mm, which almost no one has, which is required. This giant thing is required for the 28-70. Not many people do a 95mm lens filter, but you need one for the big front element.
It's huge.
95mm. Trying to get it into the face area. Doesn't do lens tracking. Does face tracking. Ooh. So those are a necessary evil. They're super expensive. It's annoying. They're like, it's like $1,000 worth of variable ND filters, but Australian dollars, not American dollars. It's like 12 American dollars.
Oh my God. There's more.
Microphones, Rode VideoMic Pro Plus, which is rechargeable. I've upgraded it from the foam to the Dead Cat, which is way better for wind. And the reason I've stuck with this, despite it being extremely large, is it seems to be pretty durable, and I'm very hard on my gear. And also it has a safety channel and a good preamp and stuff in it, but a safety channel. The safety channel basically allows people to be really loud, and I've still got a backup channel that's, I think, 12 decibels lower in the recording. So if someone screams, I can use the lower decibel recording side of it in the other side. So use that all the time when I'm shooting video. And then the DJI mics, which I used to use the Rode, and then I upgraded to these. I'd probably go back to Rode if they had a case like this, because I really like the case. It's a charging case. Tells you how much is left in the charging case. Charges the mic and the they're receivers. It's all really easy and neat.
I was going to say, you're contained. Always ready to go.
You're always ready to go. Super good. Yeah. So
charge the case, put them in.
Otherwise, I'm always a Rode fiend. They're the best. This is a Rode mic. Yeah, that's a Rode mic that you're using. Yeah, much before Rode, but DJI, these were pretty good.
Yeah.
DJI Mavic 3 Classic with the new remote. It's freaking awesome. That's it.
How many trees have you hit with this one?
None, I don't think. I hit a lot with the last drone.
You did. But have you still got that?
No, I sold it to a guy. He's stoked with it. He was doing a trip around Australia. First drone.
That's it.
The Air 2S was great. The biggest reason to upgrade to the Mavic 3 Classic for me, because I shoot hybrid all the time, so photo and video on almost every shoot. This has variable aperture, whereas the Air 2S doesn't. So the Air 2S I had to fit ND filters to. So I had to put a different ND filter on and then take off and fly. And then trying to get the shutter speed right for photo versus video, because you want the shutter speed for video at, say, a 50th, and then the shutter speed for a photo, obviously, at a lot higher. It was a freaking nightmare. So having a variable aperture, I can get away with no ND, or maybe I'll get a really light ND. But I can use the aperture to compensate from going to photo to video, get a decent shutter speed on my photo. And that's a game changer, because I don't have to land to go photo to video.
Yeah. Is that also, the other one didn't have the remote,
the other one had the old remote, but I could have bought this remote with the screen for $400 and used it with the other one. So that was an option. This is heavier than the Air 2S, but the image quality is better and the variable aperture is a game changer. It's also faster and longer battery. Basically, with the Air 2S, I would travel with three batteries in my bag. Now I've just got two, one in the drone and one spare, because it lasts for 45 minutes, whereas the Air 2S lasted for like 33. So, one and a spare is plenty. Moving on. Boring. Action cameras. GoPro Hero 11, recently upgraded, loving it. 10-bit color instead of 8-bit. Much nicer looking footage. Other than that, it's pretty similar. It's actually got a new... It's a lie. It's got a new full-frame option, which is like... It's hard to explain. Basically, it's almost square. It's like 8x7 or something image area. Almost square, but not quite. So normally it squishes that into 16x9, and that's why you get such a wide angle look. That's what they call hyperview. That's why you see so much in the frame. But you can just record it unsquished at like 5.7K or something, and then you can crop verticals or horizontals out of it. So if you're doing a lot of like reels and stuff, you could leave it on square and crop verticals out of your footage and get a lot higher resolution and a lot more to work with. So that's an interesting feature that I haven't played. I tried with it a bit, but for point of view footage on mountain bikes and that kind of stuff, it actually works better to keep it squished for me. But yeah, the big upgrade was the 10-bit color instead of 8-bit color. It's much nicer to work with in post-production. And it's actually nicer straight out of the camera too.
Yeah.
Upgraded from the 9 to the 11.
And a chest mount, was it?
And a chest mount. I've got other GoPro mounts, like handlebar mount and stuff, and a few other bits and pieces that I carry with me, depending on what we're filming, just to try and get a few extra shots. But most of the time, I'll either have it on a stick for like a follow shot, or I'll put it on the rider as a chest mount or something like that, just to get some point of view footage.
Yeah.
New purchase of the week, thanks to Lars. Hang on. Technical difficulties. No.
You really have been shopping.
Is a Insta360 camera. Nice. Yeah. So I'm going to try that out. Try and do, for when I can't fly the drone, I think I can do some drone-like shots. But I also want to use it for... Thanks, Grant. Grant says anticlimactic. Yeah, I know. It was stuck on the battery. I was charging the battery. It was stuck on the battery door. Okay. We'll use it to either fake drone shots, do some follow stuff, or I will hopefully use it to make some videos for this channel. So stick it and, you know, film myself doing a shoot and that kind of stuff, different situations. Sure. You might be able to test it out too. It's like a cool stick.
You whack people with that.
Yeah, good. Whack and stick. Whack some eshays. Do I need to explain to the listener what an eshay is?
Nah, I think we'll leave it.
These bags Velcro off the top of the lid, and this one's got, so basically this has got all the batteries that I need for all the spares that I need. Batteries, drone battery, GoPro battery or two, spare camera battery, rarely need that, but I always take one just in case something goes wrong with the battery, and spare blades for the drone. So as long as I grab this, which Velcros to the side of the case, and then it Velcros to the side of my bag, that's all I need.
On the inside or the outside?
Inside.
Yeah.
So like where the padded dividers are, just Velcros to those. Cool. And then, if I need batteries, I know I've got spares for everything in there and the spare drone blades.
Yeah, nice.
And then probably almost last but not least, other than like cleaning stuff and bits and pieces and a card wallet, is lens hoods. I don't always take them out on shoots. I don't shoot with them very often at all because they get in the way of ND filters and stuff like that, and they just make the lenses bigger to fit in my bag. But if it's raining, these are basically essential to keep water off the front element of the camera. Makes it much easier to shoot, especially when you're out for 2 hours shooting in the rain. So I always have them in my main kit, but then I'll rarely pack them into my actual backpack or whatever, depending on what
shoot. Just if you think you'll need them.
If it's going to rain, I'll definitely put them on the lenses that I'm taking. So yep. Do you shoot with lens hoods?
Yeah, my 28 mil one. It broke and then it fell off. So I need to get a new one of them. But yeah, the 58 and the 105 both have lens hoods.
Yeah. Nice. Well, apparently Elena tried to cook food and burnt it. To finish off, if you had to choose one camera and one lens from your current kit to document the end of the world because, I don't know, there's a zombie apocalypse or something, what would you pick?
I'd like to take the 28 because it's lovely, but I don't want to be that close to a zombie, so I'd have to take the 7200.
Oh, interesting.
So I could stay a little bit further away.
Yeah, but it's not just zombies, you know, like you're documenting people, you know, the end of the world, everything. You have to take photos of everything.
If I wanted it to look nice, I'd take the 28. If I wanted to...
You can't answer like that. You just have to pick one and tell us why. You have to pick one. Which one?
Probably the 28. I think this looks cool.
Okay. So you take the D850 and 28mm 1.4 and you document the end of the world with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably get eaten by a zombie.
It's a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
Pretty
good. A 2470 or a 7200 would be smarter, but they don't look nice. So.
Yeah. No, that's a solid choice.
Yeah, what are you grabbing?
Look, do you want the real answer or the answer that I'd like to tell people?
Give us both.
Okay.
What's the real answer?
GoPro.
Yeah,
fair. I just carry it around everywhere. I'd probably wear it all the time, and I just, you know, yeah. Oh, Grant, you're a smart dude. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Oh, drone. Okay, you win. You win, Grant. Yeah. Smart. I was going to say GoPro because I can just wear it and document and stuff like that. If I actually had to answer the question the way I intended it, which was pick a camera and a lens, it would be the R3 with the 28 to 70, which is like, it's, you know,
a big lens to run away from zombies with, though.
Yeah, but you could bash a I could bash a zombie with this. Yeah. I could kill an R3 with this. You could. I could swing it around on a lucky camera strap. Because if you grab a lucky camera strap and then have your camera and swing it around like this, that is a deadly zombie killing weapon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Especially like the bottom of an R3. Just clock a zombie in the head.
With the extra weight of the 28-70 and then with the whip you get from genuine Australian-made leather camera straps from Lucky Camera Straps, that extra
in long length.
In long length with the quick release system. And then,
luckycamerastraps.com.
Correct. Honestly, in the intention of that question, I would pick the R3 28-70 because you could kind of get plopped anywhere in the world and document very well with that combo.
Yeah.
Look, it's not battle tested yet, Grant. It's not battle tested. I haven't actually used it. I did a quick test with it and that's it. So maybe next week I'll upgrade to the Insta360 so that I can like have the stick and then run away from zombies and then put the stick near the zombie and then back again. And that could be. And the stick, I've actually got a really big Insta360 stick that Lars sold with it. That would be a good zombie stick. So
how'd you get that off Lars?
Yeah,
has he upgraded or is just not using it?
I think he's changed into something else. It wasn't working for like the big stitched images and stuff, I think. Like it does them. It didn't work with his software or something. So he just said it wouldn't suit. So I grabbed it. We have to have Lars on the podcast one day, talk real estate photography and stuff.
Mm. Yeah, I've got a few people who have been thinking about getting on. So
yeah, we'll do it. But for now, that might pretty much wrap it up. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Dinner time?
No. Yeah, I think it's dinner time.
Yeah. I wonder what Grant's having for dinner in Japan. Probably some delicious karage chicken, gyoza, something from
7-Eleven. That's all you need. Mm. That's all we actually know how to order is karage and
gyoza. Pork katsu. All the good stuff.
Oh, the katsu.
Yeah, don't forget.
Yeah.
We'll have to go back. Mm. All right. We'll leave it there. Right. Enjoy your dinner.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy your burnt veggies.
Yeah. I'll get on it. I'll go and see what Elena's done. Oh, hang on. We're getting updates. Home cooked meal from his host. Delightful.
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye. All right.
Thank you. See you guys.